Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 704, Interview with John Loftus, being recorded on February 21st of the year 2010. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves John Loftus, the author of, among other books, The Never to Be Published in America Witness Tree, American Nazi Secrets, if I have it right, the new edition of The Belarus Secret, Unholy Trinity, and The Secret War Against the Jews, the last two co-authored with Mark Ahrens. John, welcome back to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah, America's Nazi Secret is going to be a bit of an eye-opener, because here is a book that went out and, it was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize in history. It was on 60 Minutes, congressional hearings, all that. But what comes out now is the lengths to which the U.S. government went to suppress this poor little book. And all I did was to say, hey, look, there's this place called Belarusia that collaborated with the Nazis during World War II, and every member of the Nazi government, every member is in the United States. These are major war criminals, and they've been protected for years. And I actually fought to get permission from CIA, which ironically was very, very supportive of my efforts, because CIA had taken the blame for something done by a rival organization called OPC, Office of Policy Coordination within the State Department. You know those movies that they have, Mission Impossible, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your operations. Mm-hmm. Well, that was OPC. That was the Dulles brothers. Because Dulles thought that his buddy, Dewey, was going to win. And Alan Dulles was the New York campaign manager. Alan Dulles was supposed to become the first head of the CIA as soon as Dewey was elected. And so when Dewey won, they were horror-struck. Because Dulles had already recruited all these Nazi guys, you know, as a cover, quite frankly, for his corporate involvement with the Nazi party. But so we had two CIAs, one that worked for the Democrats under President Truman, and one that worked inside the State Department for Alan Dulles. And they were total rivals. The CIA didn't know what was going on. Truman thought the CIA was just something to give him a daily newspaper. He had no idea that he had launched a covert operation unit that was run by the leading whites of the Republican Party and was financing it with hidden funds out of the CIA's budget. That's exactly what happened. We had two separate CIAs, one that worked for Republicans, one for the Democrats.
Very quickly, John, in addition to the intelligence functions, one of the things that you report on at length and in detail in The Secret War Against the Jews is the Crusade for Freedom and how Alan Dulles spun this whole thing into the Republican Party. Encapsulate that for us, if you would.
Well, the Crusade for Freedom was a public relations effort. Ronald Reagan, for example, was a young movie actor that they recruited to be a front for this Nazi recruiting group. And the essence of the program, as we found out from the Nixon administration when they briefed the Australians, was that the Republicans saw the Eastern European ethnic groups, the Nazi refugees, if you will, as an antidote to the Jewish groups in the United States that voted for the Democrats. I know it sounds horrible, but the first President Bush actually was the Republican National Committee delegate that was the liaison to these Nazi organizations.
William Casey figured in this concatenation, too, did he not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. William Casey, the reason he was with the SEC is that they had to find some way of blocking American government investigations into this sort of Nazi connection, because, quite frankly, as long as there were World War II veterans around, these guys were vulnerable. So they used the British 75-year classification program to cover up a horrible, horrible plan where they were both vulnerable. So I can't, I can't tell you the name of the movie yet, but we've been working for 4 years. We're going to be doing a documentary film that will be released sometime this year that will just, people will be astonished.
Right, and Richard Nixon figures into this entire concatenation as well in a big way.
Yeah, Richard Nixon was a young Navy officer, and right after World War II, he was put to work with the Brooklyn Navy Yard going over German contracts, and he discovered how the Dulles brothers' clients had all been in bed with the Nazis during World War II. It was treason. And Dulles was a very smart young naval officer, and he went to Alan Dulles first. And the Dulles brothers said, hey, when your tour of duty is up, we're going to run you for Congress. And it was the Dulles brothers and this Nazi money that financed Nixon's election campaign. A very clever guy was Richard Nixon.
Indeed. John, let's go back to the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, we've covered some of their history on up through the Nasser regime in Egypt in the 1950s and 1960s. Talked about their spinoff, Hamas. Another of their spinoffs, of course, were the not only the Afghan Mujahideen against the Soviets, but Al-Qaeda as well.
This is where it becomes really interesting. Because the Dulles brothers had covertly financed, through the CIA, without the CIA knowing it, this group of Arab Nazis. So they're going to keep the Arab Nazis in the closet as sort of a counterweight against the Arab communists. And that, you know, is sort of a Cold War by proxy. And so the last time we took the Nazis out of the closets was back in 79 with the Russian coups in Afghanistan. And we, used the Mujahideen, the Arab Nazis, as recruiters. During the 60s, we had brought some of the leading lights of these guys into the U.S. And in the late 70s and early 80s, we set up recruiting centers for the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States. And these guys recruited the Arab Nazis and the second-generation Mujahideen all across America and sent them to Afghanistan to fight the Russians. Great program. Succeeded. We threw the Russians out, and by 89, the CIA washed its hands. Now, here's the funny thing. See, the CIA, the Democratic CIA, was never allowed to know the names of the people in the program. That was the money went to the Saudis gambled with the Pakistanis, so the CIA was kept in the dark. They were funding the Muslim Brotherhood. Only the State Department knew, and the Vice President of the United States, George Bush, because he was in charge of the program.
And ultimately, of course, they morphed into, once the Soviets were driven out of Afghanistan, they morphed into Al-Qaeda, a name only too familiar to contemporary listeners, even the young ones.
Yeah, now, Al-Qaeda, I mean, the head of the Mujahideen was the religious mentor of Osama bin Laden. Allegedly, Osama murdered him.
This was then, Abdullah Azzam, right?
Yeah, Azzam. Azzam was murdered, and then Osama went through the rosters of all the old World War II Nazis and the modern Nazis to pick out the people that he wanted for the base of his organization. And he put check marks beside the old Muslim Brotherhood rosters and along with the rosters of the people at the training camp. Now, this checklist, it was the base of his organization. And, of course, the Arabic word for the base is Al-Qaeda. But people don't realize that Al-Qaeda was the base of the old Muslim Brotherhood Nazi movement that, you know, this is where they came from. It sort of makes sense, you know, that they had a very common philosophy, that here was, they were always against, you know, the Christians and Jews and against democracy and Western civilization. Well, the worldview of the Nazis, the Weltanschauung of the Muslim Brotherhood was identical with Al-Qaeda. It's no surprise to us that know the covert history of the Muslim Brotherhood to realize that once again we have some organizations like the U.S. State Department that are in bed with the parent organization of Al-Qaeda. In fact, it's one of the great tragedies that the State Department actually tried to fund the Muslim Brotherhood, claiming this was a moderate organization that would help the U.S. Round up all the Sunni anti-communists to destroy the Shiites of Iran, an asinine program. But we actually, as late as the end of the Bush administration, we had a State Department unit that I went around going crazy to expose that was putting your taxpayers' dollar into funding an Arab fascist movement that was a straight line thing from Adolf Hitler. And they were doing it, and they were claiming it as moderate. So, of course, a group of us got together and exposed them. And in retaliation, the State Department destroyed the charity that I was running. It was called the Intelligence Summit. And we were trying to bring together, you know, people from, you know, both anti-CIA, pro-CIA, all walks of life, all different countries, to say, hey, wait a minute, let's sit down in an off-the-record situation with the press, members of the academic community, let's tell each other what really happened. Very successful program. We had four intelligence summits. Everybody loved it except the State Department. And they went berserk trying to destroy it. And they finally did.
When your personal struggles against these elements. You came across, and maybe this was the allusion to the State Department front, but somebody who tragically, disgustingly is a hero to the so-called progressive sector, Sami Al-Aryan, or as I call him, Sami the Aryan, was a focal point of your investigation, and that led to Operation Green Quest. I wonder if you would not only detail that for us, John, but what is one of the things that's so fascinating is how the revelations that came out of the Operation Green Quest raids that you precipitated led to something of a parallel network in which the Muslim Brotherhood, these Arab Nazis, basically Islamic Nazis, were formed into sort of a parallel network by people like Karl Rove, Grover Norquist, and others within the GOP. And you covered that, by the way, on what's the guy's name? Keith Olbermann's show in the early part of this decade.
Oh, and a few other shows as well. Yeah, I actually spent about a year and a half on Fox TV. And so one day I was their intelligence advisor, and my dad saw Bill O'Reilly say, "Oh, John Loftus is a really good guy. Too bad he belongs to the wrong party." And Dad said, "They found out you're a Democrat, John. You're through. Fox is going to get rid of you." So they, sure enough, they did. But it was one of those sad things. A bunch of my friends in the intelligence community said, "Look, you live in St. Petersburg, Florida. Right across the bay from me is one of the major Arab terrorist groups in the U.S. It's the Hamas group. And Hamas is, to this day, the successor of the Muslim Brotherhood's Nazi organization in Palestine. And Hamas is the rival of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, another splinter group. Now, Sami Al-Aryan and his fellow professor were the two guys in the world in charge of the splinter group, the PIJ, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which everyone will agree, is the most vicious, most unprincipled, and most terroristic of all the terrorist groups. They stop at nothing. There is no peace treaty with them. When Hamas says, "Let's have a hudna, let's have a temporary ceasefire," it's the PIJ that breaks it. So,
and now, Sami Al-Aryan, what was his position within Palestinian Islamic Jihad?
Well, he tried to run for the number one position, but was narrowly defeated by his fellow professor in Tampa, Professor Shalak, who is now the world head, so Sami was only number two. Sami was the vice president of the world of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and was in charge of the Western Hemisphere operations of the PIJ. He literally was raising money in the U.S. to kill Jews.
By the way, listeners to the program can view a picture of a Palestinian Islamic Jihad rally in the description for the Record 687, and they're giving the Nazi salute, which is what they do. And so, Sami the Aryan, or as I call him, Sami Al-Aryan. I call him Sami the Aryan, and your pursuit of this, and it led to some very big names indeed, including names very familiar to most Americans.
Well, it was funny because my friends in intelligence said, "You got to help us. You got to expose this guy." So I donated money to all of Sami Al-Aryan's front groups, his charities in Florida, and they were all frauds. And then I turned around and sued him to find out whether my money was going for a legitimate charitable purpose or whether, in fact, it was being diverted into terrorism. But the funny thing was, in my complaint, I listed every detail from Sami's classified files. Now, to protect myself legally, because of my previous security clearances, I submitted my draft complaint in advance to CIA, Justice, State, and a bunch of other agencies. CIA loved it. They actually sent me a letter saying, "This is, you know, please understand, go ahead and file this lawsuit." You know, the CIA had taken all the blame for being involved with these terrorist groups. It wasn't them, it was the State Department and the FBI. So I had given, I think, our 10-day notice before I would have to file a lawsuit. And the ninth day, knock on my door, a couple of guys from the FBI. "Mr. Loftus, your lawsuit here involves highly classified information. In one case, we found there were only 21 people in the entire U.S. government that knew this stuff. And now you're number 22. You want to tell us how you found out?" And I said, "I'm sorry. I'm a attorney-client privilege in Florida. I can't reveal the names." I said, "You know a guy named John O'Neill?" I said, "Well, no comment." So then, you know, the cat was out of the bag. John O'Neill was the FBI's head of counterterrorism in New York, and no one in the FBI listened to him. He warned them that the Arabs are going to come. They're going to destroy the place. No one paid any attention to him at all. So it was John O'Neill that gave me a lot of inside information.
And he quit the FBI and was hired as security director for the World Trade Center and died on 9/11.
Yep. Well, what an irony. America's top expert on Al-Qaeda was inside the Twin Trade Towers on the day it attacked, and the FBI didn't listen to him. So the FBI has just lied through its teeth. Don't get me wrong. 99% of the FBI are good, decent people. But there is a sick 1% left over from Hoover's days that are in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood. And we actually had top-level FBI people in Tampa Bay and in Washington itself that were attending CARE functions. Now, please, it's not C-A-R-E, which is a wonderful charity that supports poor people around the world. This is C-A-I-R, the Congress of Arab Islamic, American Islamic Relations. And CARE is nothing more than a front group for Hamas. Absolutely. This is Hamas is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, and CARE is their PR spokesman. Sami Alarian was one of the founders of this. But Hamas and PIG have always had this brother-sister rivalry over the years. But we actually have videotapes of this brave young woman went wearing a burqa with a video camera, and she photographed these guys saying, "Now, who will give us money to kill Jews? $500 will get someone to go out and kill a Jew and stab him with a knife in Jerusalem. And this money is not going to, you know, PIJ or organization. This is going to go directly to killing Jews."
This was Rita Katz, a.k.a. Anonymous, was it not?
Sure. Yeah.
And listeners...
Rita was working for Steve Emerson.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Steve. Here's this, nice young Jewish guy working for CNN. They're not running the stories about the growing terror. So Steve does this great documentary for PBS, and he's standing in front of the World Trade Towers, which had been hit back in the 90s, saying they're going to come back, they're going to destroy this place.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would listen. In fact, and I hate to say this to my left-wing friends, they attack Steve as some right-wing nutcase. The guy, I think, is pretty moderate, but he certainly is absolutely meticulous in his factual research.
Let's get back to not only CARE, but the lobbying mechanism which was exposed by your raids, Operation Green Quest, or the raids that you helped to instigate, which demonstrated on so many of the supposedly moderate Muslim groups, and sadly the groups that had been allowed to represent the American Islamic community, were in fact not representative of the American Islamic community at all, but were Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, yeah. CARE and the Islamic Society of North America, they're very clever. They have like 20 charities, each one with wonderful sounding names. And it's all the same people, and it's all the same money. The money all came from the same street address in Herndon, Virginia. And when you got through the 20 charities in Herndon that funded the 20 charities of Islam in America, it turns out that they were all Saudi Wahhabi extremist charities.
And one of the things you've spoken about, too, on Keith Olbermann's show and on your website are the people like Grover Norquist and Karl Rove who lobbied for them.
Lobbied for them? My God, Grover Norquist was the evil genius that gave us the Republican Party's tax program, that brought us, the whole bit of the right-wing Republican separation of the church and state to... there's nothing nice I can say about Grover Norquist. But Grover Norquist was the leader of, I guess, what we call the early Tea Party movement. And his best friend was one of the White House chief of staff guys. And so we had, the Bush administration was hiring Arab-American relationship people, particularly about Grover Norquist. We actually were at the point where we had Islamic terrorists picked out by Islamic terrorists working for the White House. And President Bush had his picture taken with Sami Alarian's son and another one of Grover Norquist's clients, was Abdullah, he was convicted. He was the guy that picked all the Islamic chaplains for our prisons and all our Islamic chaplains for the army. I mean, this stuff was really heavyweight. So,
was this Abdurrahman Alamoudi?
Alamoudi, yes. Thank you. The memory goes first. Alamoudi was Alarian's friend, Grover Norquist's buddy and client, and Alamoudi, of course, was convicted. Now, Alarian and Alamoudi are supposed to tell the Justice Department all they know about the Saudis, and quite frankly, those cases have never come to trial. What a coincidence, What a fraud. What a fraud.
You also mentioned
the Saudis are beating up on the Chinese to keep the American dollar afloat, then the truth about Nazis and Islamic terrorism will not come out. Well, it will come out. I'm going to have a fun year this year.
One of the people that you mentioned, too, as being involved with this Muslim Brotherhood GOP concatenation was Karl Rove. I'm wondering if the firing of some of the U.S. attorneys might have had something to do with keeping the lid on that.
You know, Karl Rove was a deputy White House chief of staff, and Grover Norquist were good buddies. These were the guys that funded and supported the radical right. And they saw that as the Nixon administration did. You hire the ultra-right fascists as a counterweight to the Jewish vote for the Democrats. And there's no other way to put it. This is historically what happened. And Grover Norquist and Karl Rove, you know, should, if we can't put them in prison, I mean, they should be exposed for what they did to America. And they could say, oh, we didn't know that they were terrorists. Oh, please. Oh, please. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood is a very well-known organization. Mm-hmm. Who they were and what they did has been known for a long, long time. They did it because they thought it would, guys like Al-Aryan said, I can deliver the Arab vote in Florida, and that will elect George Bush. It will give him a narrow victory.
Rather like the Nazi influence within the Eastern European and Central European communities,
sure,
in this case. So
sure.
It's a parallel network, basically.
Yeah. I mean, when I read some of the Australian briefing files about, you know, the Nixon administration was saying, of course, you know, our State Department warns selected politicians to stay away from, like, the Croatian community celebrations on April 10th because that's the day that the Nazis established their puppet government. You know, so just as the Republican administrations always knew that they were supporting the ultra-right fanatics of the Eastern Europeans, they knew this, the current Republican parties knew they were supporting the ultra-right of the Arab Nazis. They knew exactly who they were in bed with. There are no innocents here.
John, we've been talking about an Islamic fascist organization and its various permutations and connections, the Muslim Brotherhood. In another one of the books that you co-authored with Mark Ahrens on Holy Trinity, you went into how the Vatican intersects very, it is pivotally involved with many of these same elements. Very recently, Pope Pius XII has been beatified by the Vatican, and you write about him and many of his associates in On Holy Trinity. I'd like to get your thoughts on the beatification of Pius XII, and also if maybe you could encapsulate how the Vatican Bank intersect with some of these same elements, including the funding of Hitler.
In my forthcoming book, America's Nazi Secret, I'm going to reveal that when I first tried to write about this 30 years ago, I was ordered by the U.S. intelligence agencies not to write about how the Vatican laundered out the Nazi money and smuggled out the Nazi war criminals out of Europe. The Vatican had a whole network under Pius XII of monasteries and convents smuggled fugitive Nazi war criminals out of Europe to South America, to Australia, and to Canada. Now, the irony was the U.S. government was still out hunting Nazis for 3 or 4 years after World War II when the French, British, Australian, and Canadian governments were recruiting them. And I have very good sources that, quite frankly, burglarized the Vatican's intelligence files at those times. One of my inside sources was one of the four Vatican historians of World War II who saw the real files. There's an awful book out, you know, promoting Pope Pius XII, saying, gee, if you only read the files and saw what this guy did. Well, my source was one of the four guys, the four Catholic priests, who read the Vatican files and was passing what was really going on through my cutout, Bill Gowan of Manhattan, to me. And we knew what the Vatican files really said. And to prove it, we sent a young British journalist who spoke fluent Serbo-Croatian, and we had him pose as a young Croatian Nazi with his tape recorder. He went around interviewing all the surviving Catholic priests that worked on this Croatian smuggling network for the Vatican. And they bragged how they had saved thousands and thousands of Nazis right after World War II, and chipped them up. So we had it all on tape. That's why the CIA gave and said, what can we do now? You know, these guys blew the whistle on themselves, so go ahead and write it. That's why I was allowed to write with Mark Ahrens the book Unholy Trinity about the Vatican, the Nazis, and the Swiss banks. because I had known all along how the Nazis got out, how the Nazi money got away. It was just a problem getting permission to publish it. So people that doubted that none of my books were true, in this new book, America's Nazi Secrets, you can FOIA CIA and other agencies and see how this stuff was censored out 30 years ago. So it's true beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Pius XII, formerly Eugenio Pacelli, was a player in the development of fascism.
He was the guy, when he was papal nuncio, like an ambassador, if you will, to Berlin, he was the guy that handed over bags of money to Adolf Hitler to form the Nazi Party.
And that in 1919.
Yep. The Italian phrase was, he was the troppo tedeschi, too much the German. The nun who adored him, La Popessa, they called her, the little pope.
Mm-hmm.
She was a German nun who just adored him, and she admitted that he financed Hitler. He was very pro-German. So Pius XII, there is this movement afoot to try and get him beatified and get him canonized as saint before the 75-year time ban expires. Because when all the British and American files are declassified, the guy's going to look like what he was, like a dirty little snake that, used Nazi money, it took it right and left, and, helped the Nazis escape. So far from being a saint, he was closer to the devil's vicar on earth than Christ.
We're down to about our last couple of minutes here. In previous interviews, as well as in Unholy Trinity, we've talked about the profound Vatican involvement, helping to actually the Vatican Bank's involvement with financing Nazi Germany in the first place, and the actual sheltering of people like Antti Pavlovich within Castel Gandolfo, the Pope's summer residence.
Yeah, it's the Vatican Bank. In fact, they were just announced this year that the Vatican Bank is still one of the top 20 banks in the world involved with laundering criminal money.
Oh.
Which is why the Dulles brothers sought them out. It was one of the few banks in the world that has diplomatic immunity, and its books can never be audited. So, and let's be candid. The CIA has used the Vatican Bank. That's how, under the Reagan administration, we laundered the money through the Vatican, and the priest hand carried the cash to Poland, and we bought printing presses for Solidarity. And that was a good thing, because it led to freedom of speech in Poland and to the Polish uprising, and they threw the communists out. So sometimes the Vatican helped us. I'm not saying that everything they did was bad. I'm saying that most of what they did was bad.
By the way, John, we are down to our last minute or so of the interview. Perhaps for the benefit of particularly of younger listeners, the real message here, we've talked about Islamic fascism, we've talked about the Vatican's involvement with fascism. The point is neither to be anti-Muslim nor anti-Catholic nor anti-anybody else, but the message is that once you begin playing ball with the devil, sometimes it's not that easy to get out. Speaking of playing ball with the devil, you're chronicling that in a new book that you're going to be coming out with. We've already spoken about it. If you would give us a nice, well-paced plug for that book and the publisher.
Well, thank you. Yeah. The book is called America's Nazi Secret. It should be out, I think, this summer from Trine Day Publishing. So if you want to get an advanced copy, please order it from Trine Day. They're the only publishing house in America that promised me that they would help me get this book out without censorship. And I think after 30 years legally, I can't be censored anymore. So we're going to let it all come out, folks. And the book you want to read is America's Nazi Secret. That will explain in some detail how we financed Hitler, how Hitler got his money out, and how we got in bed with the Arab Nazis, and what that led us to in the Middle East today.
All righty. And
the Obama administration is in many ways the last victim of World War II.
The Obama administration?
Oh, sure.
All righty.
Alrighty.
Well, let's take up the Obama administration and recent developments on various fronts in a future interview, but we are all out of time here. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program number 704, interview with John Loftus, being recorded on February 21st of 2010. For John Loftus, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.